Before we begin today's episode of Potterless, I first wanted to thank everyone that's left us a rating and review on iTunes because we've hit 75 total reviews, which is awesome. These reviews, first off, are so sweet. You guys say the nicest things. But second, they really do help more people find the podcast, which is great because it increases our likelihood of coming up in searches, both on the podcasting app and just on Google and stuff like that. So if you want to take the time just to go into the Apple Podcasts app, whether it's on your phone or on iTunes on your computer, even if you don't use them, you can just go into the app, search Potterless, leave it a review. You don't even have to type anything. You can just click the little five-star thing. It really does help a lot and helps more people find us. So thank you to everyone that has written one so far, and thank you in the future to everyone who decides to write one. In announcement news, we're making progress on shirts. So if you are a patron in the shirt tier or higher, head on over to patreon.com/potterless and please vote in the poll on whether or not you'd like the shirt to be a V-neck or a crew neck. Just trying to get a sense of what people want before I order them. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Patreon is basically a website where you can pledge money to the podcast, and I put all of that money back into the podcast. There is no need to do so, only if you feel like doing it, no pressure at all. But there's some cool rewards that you can get, and shirts is one of the tiers, so it's not too late to get in on the shirt train, and hopefully you guys find some stuff over there that you like. If not, not a problem at all. But speaking of Patreon, we've got a lot of new patrons to thank. So first off, shout out to our newest patrons, Ashley McCrory, Neon Green Tiger, Rita Fagan, Johnny Frolickstein, 1159 to Midnight, previous guest, Charlotte Dow, and guest on this episode, Eric Schneider. Also shout out to Harlan Haskins, Sean Jones, and Low Downtown, who all upgraded their pledges into the shirt category. And huge shout out to Jesse Horgan and Maggie Zobazek, new producer level patrons, and the return of Vicky Garcia, who was a producer patron before, had to take a little break, but is back. So thank you to all of you guys. That is huge. You are such lovely, incredible people, and I'm very excited to use these pledges to help Potterless take the next step in quality. And of course, shout out to our existing producer level patrons, Andreas, Griffin, Aaron, Erica, Calvin, Michael, Sadie, Emily, and Chandra, whose avocados are always green when they open them. Guys, we have so many producers, I've had to resort to only using first names in the intro, otherwise it would take too long. But without further ado, let's get into this episode of Potterless, episode 24, which starts our journey on everyone's least favorite book, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, starring Eric Hamilton Schneider. Hello, Internet! Welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a 25-year-old man reading Harry Potter for the first time. I'm very excited for this very special guest that we have today, Mike Birbiglia. How's it going?
No, don't do this to me. Not like this.
Okay, fine. Hello, this is Eric.
You're one of the multiple people in my life that will always go like, you sound just like Mike Birbiglia.
You do. Sorry. Okay. In actuality, I'm talking with someone cooler than Mike Birbiglia. Maybe. It is Eric Schneider, the editor and producer of the Spirits podcast, and my longtime YouTube friend, Eric. How's it going?
It's going very, very well. Spirits is literally like an hour away from hitting 1 million downloads, and we're very excited.
I'm so excited. And I'm so happy.
I complete the trilogy on Potterless of all three of the Spirits team.
It was written, it was destiny that this was meant to happen. The heavens have opened and allowed for this amazing combination of events to happen, and I'm so glad to have you here.
Yeah. I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah, and not only are we celebrating that, but we are celebrating the kicking off of a new book, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Yes.
Crazy.
Which is one of my favorite books. I really like this one. I remember liking it a lot. I haven't read them in like 6 or 7 years, but I remember enjoying this one a lot.
You are one of the few, because I feel like aside from you and Julia and my friend Alex, everyone else is like, oh yeah, fifth is awful. I hated it. Like, everyone basically says it's bad until the very end. So I'm just holding on to hope. But we'll see how it goes. There's a point where I got so mad with Angsty Harry in these beginning chapters, I wanted to put the book down, but I was like, I can't. I have Potterless to record.
He is angsty in these early bits once again.
Yeah, it's a whole new level. Like, I thought book four had some angsty Harry. Oh no, it's like a whole nother Pokemon evolution of angst. It's absurd. But let's get right to it. Chapter one, Dudley Demented. Immediately, I'm very upset that another book is starting with Harry at the Dursleys. This is five in a row, which is five too many. I made
a specific note that right off the bat on page one, it just goes directly into a very detailed description of what Harry looks like, which by this point, I feel like you might just need to mention the scar. I feel like you don't need the whole shebang on what Harry Potter looks like if you've made it to book 5.
He's got bushy hair, he wears glasses. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of things that could have been removed. I can get picking up 3 and 4 for the first time. I don't think anyone's picking up Order of the Phoenix without having read anything else.
Yeah, the momentum is going at this point. People know if they're going to be into Harry Potter or not.
Yeah, thankfully this book didn't like recap all the previous books like 1 through 4 did in the first chapter, so that's fine. But we are stuck with another Dursley chapter. So basically, yes, after this description of what Harry Potter looks like and who he is, you learn that it's a very hot summer. There's a big drought going on, apparently. And they describe Harry as basically looking like a hobo.
Yeah, kind of.
Isn't doing his hair. He's got holes in all his clothes.
He's in bushes.
Hanging out in bushes. Looking scruffy. It's a rough situation for Harry Potter. A big reason why he looks so rough is that he's like spying on the Dursleys to try to hear the news. So that if anything about Voldemort is said in the headlines, he'll know what's up. So he's been like getting daily profits and only looking at the front cover. He's been trying to like poke his ear around to wherever the Dursleys are listening to the news to see if they say anything, stuff like that.
Some real sleuthing.
Oh, see, yeah, it's some real Sherlock shit by Harry up in here. The Dursleys think that Dudley is out eating dinner at a friend's house every single night, but Harry reveals that he's actually out vandalizing the park, smoking, and throwing rocks at cars every night, which is like a big turn from like, I'm a school bully to I'm destroying public property.
It is very significant. I do like that it also is like, because the books take place in like, what, the early 90s technically? Is that
Yeah, late right? 80s, early 90s.
It feels like a very early 90s thing for like some like youth hooligan. Like that's all they're doing. It's like, yeah, they're throwing rocks at cars. It's like, that's par for the course at this point.
So it's another night of Harry trying to listen to the news. He's hiding in the bushes into a window in which the Dursleys are listening to the news. And J.K. Rowling goes out of her way to note that Petunia's hands are bony and again describes her as horse-faced, which makes 5 books in a row of calling Petunia horse-faced, which I just think is a great trend that we got to keep going. I don't know if this is like the same description as Harry Potter, but I think it's been well established that Petunia looks like a horse. I know the Dursleys are like roughly based on people she didn't like from earlier in her life. She must have really fucking hated these people.
Apparently. they don't come off well at all.
No, not at all. While Harry's through the window, he hears like a loud crack and he doesn't know what it is. He pulls out his wand to try to defend himself, and Vernon then notices Harry, yells at him to put it away, thinks that this is Harry making the disruption of whatever is going on. After all this hubbub, Vernon's like, what are you doing in the window anyway? And he says that he's listening to the news, and Vernon's like, again? Why would you want to learn about the news? Like, Dudley doesn't want to do this. And Harry's like, well, Dudley's an idiot.
This is my favorite quote, I think, in the entire series, is that he says he's listening to the news again because it changes every day.
He does, yeah.
Which I think is it's hands down the best thing Harry Potter says at any point during any of the 7 books.
It was a really good line. So yeah, the exact quote is, he goes, again? And Harry goes, well, you see, it changes every day. To which I wrote all caps, ooh, baby, get some aloe for that burn!
Oh, it's so good. That is the only
good thing about sassy or angsty Harry is that there are some really good comebacks. He has another good one pretty soon because Vernon then replies with, we know you're up to something. We're not stupid. And Harry goes, well, that's news to me, which is like, oh. And not only does he say this, but he says this and then immediately turns around and walks into the street. So he drops the mic after just destroying Vernon. It's fantastic. Harry is convinced that the cracking noise that he heard was someone either apparating or disapparating. He immediately wants to blame Dobby for it because that's the same noise that Dobby made when he did it in book 2. But then Harry's like, wait a second. Maybe it wasn't a magical person. Maybe I just think it is because I'm yearning for magical world because I miss Hogwarts so much. And then gets into this like long, drawn out, sappy thing about how he misses being a wizard and stuff. Like he does every summer when he's at the Dursley's house. Like, this is not new territory.
And, like, what's crazy about that at this point is I think he's only been away for, like, a month. Is that right? So it's not even like it's the end of summer. He's like,
no,
gotta get back to that wizard stuff. I get it. If I was in a magical place and then not and in this terrible place, I would yearn for it immediately. But it's like, I mean, why not just put it more towards the end of summer? Why not?
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten through four of these same summers before. I guess the fifth time is just the last straw on the camel's back. He just can't do, he can't deal. So the only contact he has with the Wizarding World so far is getting the Daily Prophet and then just basically reading the headline and nothing else, because he figures that if it's going to be about Voldemort, it's going to mention him in the headline.
Are there comics in the Daily Prophet?
There should be.
Do we know anything about like what's actually in the later pages of the Daily Prophet?
The only thing we ever learn is that apparently in the later pages they use Harry as an insult.
Yeah.
But they don't ever explain what else is in there.
Because there's got to be like a funny strip in there somewhere.
Like a crossword puzzle. Some cartoons, maybe a coupon section.
I mean,
section.
Think about how much cooler a magical crossword would be. You could do all kinds of crazy, like the whatever the word spell, it could come to life right in front of you.
That'd be super fun. Maybe I'd actually do a crossword. So his only contact is reading those Daily Prophets and then getting letters from Ron and Hermione. But every single letter that he gets from Ron and Hermione is like, oh, we can't tell you what's happening. Dumbledore's not letting us tell you what's going on, blah, blah, blah. So Harry is very upset about that, as he always is every summer when he doesn't get the letters that he wants. Then we get into our first stint of super angsty Harry, which is Harry being convinced that they're hanging out at Ron's, having fun without him, and keeping busy, and that they're just like lying to him, that they don't want to spend time with him, and they're just having all this fun without them. And then he gets into this awful thing where he's like, did they forget who I am? Like, I'm Harry freaking Potter. I save them all the time. Like, I've done all this cool stuff. And it's like, dude, you would have got killed like seven times if it wasn't for Hermione. Be grateful.
It's the truth.
Like, he really needs to be more humble about this situation. Sirius also writes letters to Harry, but at the very least, he starts all of them with, I know this is frustrating and don't be rash, but Harry finds a way to get mad at this too, because for the letter that starts with don't be rash, he's like, who are you to tell me not to be rash? You got convicted for murder and all this other stuff. And then he specifically cites the things that Harry facilitated. He's like, I'm not the one that fled Hogwarts on a magical creature that was condemned for death that we stole from people. It's like, Harry, you stole Buckbeak and then gave it to him and then made him fly away with it. Like, you're not allowed to be mad at the shit that you did.
Also, Sirius Black spent years in Azkaban.
Yes.
So like,
for a thing he didn't do.
If a dude that spent years in Azkaban, a lot of that time in his animal form, right? So the mentors didn't drive him mad. Mm-hmm. That's like the dude that definitely gets to tell you, hey, I know it's tough.
Sure.
But you'll be fine.
Yeah, Harry has to put up with 1 month at a house, whereas Sirius had put up with 13 years of trying to have every happy memory of his life deleted from his brain. Feel like there's a bit of a difference here.
Yeah, I feel like you have to respect that dude's opinion on what sucks.
Yeah. So Harry goes to a park to go on the swings, and it literally says, quote, he moodily stared at the ground, which I think is just a great image of Harry just camping out on the swings, staring at the ground, depressed. He has loads of angsty thoughts just about every single thing, every single person, all this other stuff. And then he sees Dudley and the crew. He's kind of in a weird way hoping that they try to pick a fight with him so that he can, you know, either use magic on them or threaten it on them or something to that effect. But they don't end up coming his way. Harry then remembers that he needs to get back to the Dursley's house. Like, he has to be home before Dudley comes home. Otherwise, that's breaking curfew. His curfew is literally just, if Dudley is home, you better be home too. So he starts to go home. While he does that, when Dudley's little crew breaks apart, they call him Big D, which is a terrible nickname.
It's a very bad. It's
really bad.
Might have been a better nickname then. It's a very bad nickname now.
I mean, it's super bad because it's got some weird undertones, like they're calling him Big Dick, which is just, it's yeah. not good. It's
we
not good
We also learned
all.
At this point that Dudley has been boxing.
Yes. This
and
is
he's
exactly
like,
when we learned
like
that.
The like school boxing champ, which is not a thing. Like,
no,
school,
not at all.
Schools don't have boxing champs. That's
especially
crazy.
Not middle schools, because they're what, 14 now?
And then I think we also learn that the Dursleys have been lying about, I don't remember how we learned this, but I did write down the name of the school that they've been lying that Harry goes to.
Oh, which, they've said that since book one.
Have they? The name of the school? Because it is St. Brutus' Secure Center for Incurably Criminal Boys, and I just think that's the craziest name for
school. It's literally a prison. Like, it just sounds like a prison.
It's insane. It's truly insane.
So yeah, you learn that. Dudley's apparently lost a bunch of weight due to a mix of dieting and getting really into boxing. So he's still big, but he's a little bit thinner, and now he's even stronger than he was. So he's become just a monster of a human. Harry then goes up to Dudley, and he basically hits him with like a cool, he calls him, he's like, "Hey, what's up, Big D?" Which is just great. I love that Harry is doing this. But then he takes it a little too far. He cites all the pet names that Petunia gives him. He's like, "Oh, why don't your friends call you Icky Diddykins or Dinky Diddydums?" Which are terrible nicknames, and Harry has every right to make fun of them, but not unprovoked. Like, Harry's being a bit of a dick here.
Yeah.
And then Harry takes this bullying, pestering a little bit farther. And I start, honestly, to take Dudley's side, which is a weird feeling after being told for 4 books that he's just, like, the worst person. I start to feel bad for Dudley. And while I was reading this, I was, like, internally conflicted, just thinking, oh, I feel bad for this kid who's supposed to be awful. Because Harry is just being super mean and all this other stuff. And Dudley can't do anything because Harry has a wand in his pocket, which is basically a gun.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Dudley references this. He basically says, "You think you're all tough with that wand?" And I agree with that, which makes me even more concerned. They're in a dark alley. They kind of get into like a tuffle where they like slam each other up against the wall. But then Dudley starts fighting back. He's saying, "Oh, you're not so brave at night." He pokes fun at Harry for crying in his sleep. And that's when you learn that Harry apparently has nightmares every single night about Cedric dying. And he cries for Cedric in his sleep.
Yeah, I was definitely with you with like slowly getting on Dudley's side during this argument, and then like that happens, and then you're like, all right, like Harry's going through some pretty dark stuff right now, so I'm back on Harry's side almost immediately.
Yeah, exactly the same for me. I was like, oh man, I feel really bad. And then they're kind of like, yeah, he's basically having Nom flashbacks every single night about, yeah. And he's 14. It's like, okay, never mind. I can understand Harry being like, a little good, mean.
Excellent writing, because it makes us kind of feel like not on Harry's side. And I was like, oh no, never mind. You were wrong to not be on Harry's side.
Yeah, touche, J.K. Rowling. Had me going. So the nightmares have been happening, but Harry didn't know that he was sleep talking. So when Dudley brings this up, Harry can't hide it. And then Dudley knows that he's got him. So Harry pulls out the wand, puts him at wand point, and Dudley's like, don't do this, you know, blah, blah, blah. Come on, don't do this. But then the world starts getting dark and everything starts getting cold, which means Dementors. So Harry finally realizes what's going on, but it's too late because Dudley had been telling him like, don't make me hit you. Don't make me hit you. You know, blah, blah, blah. And finally he's had enough. Punches Harry in the face, sends him off of his feet with an uppercut, which is pretty dope. Yeah. And his wand goes flying, but then Dementors starts roughing up Dudley and, you know, all the stuff that comes along with it. And they're about to do the kiss to him. Harry hits it with the Specto Patronum. It fails 2 times like it always does. And then finally, the 3rd time's the charm and the stag comes away and like knocks it out.
It's like it gets real intense during that whole thing because Dudley doesn't know what's happening because he can't see Dementors.
Oh, right. I didn't even realize that because he can't see it.
And Harry is the one that's like has to like tell us kind of what's happening and also be like, I got to take care of this. And I don't know how I hope I could like save this kid that I hate. Mm-hmm. It gets rough.
It also gets intense for Harry because rather than hearing the cries of his parents as the scary thing that you hear when the Dementors come, he starts hearing Voldemort talking to him. So his fear has switched to Voldemort killing him as opposed to being afraid of what happened to his parents. And Voldemort says, quote, just die, just die. It's easier, I think, though I wouldn't know because I've never died before. So he hears that in his head while he's trying to fight off the Dementors and hit Expecto Patronum.
Now, is that what Voldemort says at the end of book 4, or is that is this actually Voldemort directly talking to Harry?
This is a new quote. This isn't a quote that was said before, so it must be Voldemort talking to Harry.
That's no good.
Which makes sense based on when you get to the trial all the way in chapter 8, where Dumbledore basically says, hey, these are Dementors that Voldemort must have sent.
Yeah.
And so then it would make sense if Voldemort was ready for this attack to happen.
That's true. Yeah.
And the other thing that's different is the happy thought that he uses that finally gets the Patronus to work is him hanging out with Ron and Hermione, which wasn't what it was before. So Harry's a changing boy. So Harry runs over to Dudley, saves him, And his neighbor runs out, Mrs. Fig, who was mentioned before that Harry's been spending, you know, some time over at Mrs. Fig's house during the summer. He tries to, like, hide his wand and stuff. And she's like, no, keep it out. Like, you don't know if they're going to come back. And Harry's confused, thinking, wait, hold on, she's a witch? And then she says, oh, I'm going to kill Mundungus Fletcher, which, first off, raises two questions. One, who the hell is that? Two, that's a dope-ass name.
It's a very good name.
And then that's the end of chapter one. There was a weird thing that was happening in this chapter a lot. J.K. Rowling was very specific about the layout of the streets in the neighborhood, and I just didn't care. Like, do we care about all the roads? Because she was very specific about all of the cross streets, and I don't think it matters.
It felt a lot like the last Hunger Games book, in which they get to the capital and are, like, describing moving through the city, and I'm like, I don't understand what's happening at all. And much like this, I was just like, I mean, they're cross streets and some are parallel to each other. Like, I know how streets work generally. I don't need to, like, draw a map while reading this book.
Yeah, it seemed like she had a Google map in front of her and she's like, everyone will understand this.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Even if we did, we don't care. There's a bunch of stuff that happened here, and while I'm reading this for the podcast, like, I take notes, and there was a bunch of times where I would either read 4 or 5 pages or listen to 4 or 5 minutes of the audiobook consistently and not write anything down, especially when they get to the House of the Order of the Phoenix. There's a bunch of stuff where they're describing all the things they're cleaning for a bunch of pages.
Yeah, I read that last night and I was just like, I feel bad because I should be taking notes, but there's like,
there's just nothing happening.
Giant exposition dump. Get ready for that in either later this episode or next episode.
Exactly.
Where me and Mike discuss an exposition dump.
Well, it would just be like, I would write the bullet point. I'd be like, they're cleaning the house. And then 4 pages later, it's like, they're still cleaning the house. then we get to chapter two, A Pack of Owls. Mrs. Fig mentions that Fletcher, Mundungus Fletcher, left to see someone about cauldrons that fell off a broom.
I love this. I love this part of Harry Potter that we never get to learn anything more about like, the idea of, like, stereos falling off a truck, but cauldrons falling off a broom.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this image amazes me, and I want to know more about, like, the, like, crappy dudes that are, like, selling cauldrons on, like, the side of the road by Diagon Alley, and just, like, moving, like, oh, yeah, I got this cauldron, and I'll give you 50% off.
Lame, like, crime of the Wizarding,
like,
World.
It's just, because up until this point, so much of the Harry Potter universe has been, like, so clean.
Yeah.
You go to the wand shop and get your wand. You go to the robe shop and get your robe. You go to the, mm-hmm. like, nothing has been, like, obviously there's very dark magics in this world, but we haven't learned anything about, like, how you get, like, secret supplies and everything. And we never really get any of that. But we do learn about, like, back alley cauldrons, which is amazing.
Yeah, like, the only evil that you learn about, like, the only bad thing is people murdering people and trying to possess humans and all this other stuff. There's no meddling crimes or, like, middle ground bad deviousness.
Yeah.
It's just you're either Satan or you go to Hogwarts.
And then we do learn in the next, when they go to the ministry later, in later chapters, that there is just a non-Auror, like, wizard police force, which I don't remember existing at all. Like, I think it's the only time they're mentioned in the entire series. They're like, oh no, like, regular wizard cops take care of those things. I was like, they must be looking for this guy with his cauldrons.
I would love a comedy spinoff that follows someone either, like, a boring-ish job in the Wizarding World or a boring-ish criminal. These guys selling back alley cauldrons or regular cop at Hogwarts or at the Ministry of Magic.
I would be really down for, like, just Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but
with wizards.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, that'd be so good.
Give me that show next year, please.
Yes. So Mrs. Fig mentions she is very thankful that she put Mr. Tibbles on the case of the Dementors. I'm assuming this is some sort of pet. Harry asks if she's a witch. She corrects him, saying that she's a squib, and Fletcher knew that, so it was very foolish of Fletcher to leave her alone because, you know, if this happened, she wouldn't be able to do anything. Fletcher had been following and protecting Harry, so you learn that the disapparating noise he heard was him, and then Dudley is just struggling. He's so shook from the whole Dementor thing. Harry has to basically pick him up, throw him over his shoulder, and walk him home. Fig reveals that Dumbledore tasked her and Mundungus to watch over Harry, but to not tell anyone, not even Harry. And at this point, Mundungus reapparates and Mrs. Fig just goes apeshit on him, which is understandable. So he's described as being really straggly looking. He has an invisibility cloak, which is pretty sweet. And she basically keeps like hitting him over the head with a bag of cat food. And she repeatedly either says the phrase, "I'm going to kill Mundungus Fletcher," or "I hope Dumbledore murders you." Like, the first two times, I get it. But when she says it the fifth time, I'm like, all right, Mrs. Fig, like, let's tone it down a couple notches.
Intense. Like, it's real intense on this street.
She explains that people following and keeping Harry safe was only put into effect after the school year, pretty much after Voldemort comes back to being his true form. So Dumbledore tasks some people to watch over him to keep him safe. Harry lugs Dudley all the way home, and Petunia is freaking the fuck out. She wants to know what the hell is going on. Dudley then vomits, which makes her freak out even more. And Dudley, since, as you mentioned before, since he can't see the Dementors, thinks that Harry did all of this. So he tries to put all of the blame on him.
Which, I mean, you can't argue with. You can't really, like, blame Dudley for this one. Like,
yeah, how is he going to know? So an owl comes through. Basically with a nasty gram saying that, you know, you used magic. Same kind of thing when Dobby dropped the pudding on the ground. But this one's way more intense because it says Harry's expelled from Hogwarts and that they're going to break his wand in half and confiscate. Like, they're going to confiscate his wand, break it in half, and game over. You're not a wizard anymore. Thanks for playing our game. We're the Ministry of Magic.
A bit much. A bit much, in my opinion.
Yeah, way too much. So my first thought is like, yeah, right, this shit's not going to happen. And when Harry reads the letter, he's like, oh, fuck this, I'm just going to run away. And he's about to leave, but another owl comes, and it's from Arthur Weasley, that basically starts with like, don't run away, Harry. Dumbledore's going to help figure this shit out. Just stay put. We're on it. And then he gets another letter from Sirius that basically says the exact same thing. Vernon is freaking out now because three owls have entered his house. And as we've learned from previous books,
the only thing that Vernon hates more than Harry is owls bringing stuff to Harry.
I mean, I wouldn't want three owls in my house, to be fair.
They do leave really quickly, though.
I don't want to like suddenly start like defending all of the Dursleys because they're garbage. But like, if three owls were in my house, regardless of whether or not my nephew is a wizard, that's too many owls.
So Vernon then asks Harry, what the hell happened? What is going on? And Harry says it was Dementors. And Vernon's like, what's that? And then Petunia describes what a Dementor is. And then right after, kind of like gasps and does a, you know, it's almost like one of those out of body, like wasn't thinking about it. And she's embarrassed that she knows what a Dementor is and started to describe it. And it kind of rubs Vernon the wrong way too. And then he's like, oh, well, you know, I only knew this because of my sister and James when they, you know, would talk about this or whatever.
See, there's a very interesting detail that's a spoiler that I won't give you right
okay.
there.
Okay, good.
That is very fascinating that people who have read the book will notice the thing that Mike just got wrong.
Oh, no.
Which is fascinating because I actually have it in my notes to mention it.
But not spoil it.
And you mentioned it in a way that made it much easier for me to bring up with definitely not causing you any spoilers. So that's very exciting.
The only thing I will say of note is that she goes out of her way to not call James James. She says, like, that wizard, some sort of phrase that, like, won't call him by name. So right, the only thing I can think is that there was some bad falling out between Petunia and James. Yes. But I'm not exactly
that
sure
could
what
it
would be. Ooh. Oh, man, how fucked up would it be if James had a thing with Petunia and then left her for, Lily? That would be so shitty. I hope that's not it.
Wouldn't it, Mike and listeners?
I hope it. I really hope that's not it. And if it is it, I hope the reason that he, the worst would be is if they're dating and then he like finds out. Oh no, the worst would be, here's the worst thing.
Okay, tell me what the worst thing would be.
The absolute worst. She starts as a wizard, becomes a squib, and then he's like, fuck that shit, I'm gonna date your sister. That would be the worst thing ever. I really hope that isn't it. Please, don't be it. I know James Potter started as Jesus and like we slowly learn he's like kind of a piece of shit, but I don't want him to be that much of a piece of shit.
You'll find out.
It's okay. I'm really bad at predicting stuff, so I'm probably wrong. Another owl comes in. It's the Ministry of Magic saying that they will have a hearing instead to determine whether or not his wand should be destroyed and whether or not he should be expelled. Basically, they're like, Dumbledore, talk to us. We're going to have a hearing. Vernon
asks, oh, if you're found guilty, what's going to happen? Quote, are they going to give you the death penalty? He said with a hopeful afterthought.
Too much.
I'm sorry. I get that you think your nephew is a little annoying, but you're hopeful that this 15-year-old child gets fucking murdered? That's... It's a bit much.
Yeah, see, this is back when I turned back to Harry's side.
Yeah, it's I don't like this going back and forth.
Went too far again.
Yeah, it's like just when you have us, just when you bring us in.
You start to feel human.
Absolutely terrible. Vernon demands that Harry tells him what happened, so he does. And this is when the fourth owl comes in, and this is a letter from Sirius saying the same thing as Arthur said, basically, don't leave. It's going to be fine. Just stay in the house. You'll be safe. But when Harry receives this letter, he gets mad that no one's congratulated him yet for beating the Dementors. His first thought is like, ugh, no one said good job.
He's such a diva.
I can't deal with it. He's too much. There is a funny thing. Vernon keeps calling the Dementors the wrong name. Like he calls them like Dementoids and Demembers and Dismembers. And I laughed every single time.
They were pretty good.
So Harry's then trying to figure out why would they come? And the only thing he can think of is like, it's got to be Voldemort, which is true. And this is also my thought process. Anytime anything bad happens, it's like, oh, this mean, scary thing happened. And I'm sitting there reading the book. I'm like, well, it's got to be Voldemort, which is like, you're never wrong. Like, you can't ever be wrong if the guess is like, oh, bad shit went down. Probably Voldemort.
Although, I mean, later on in this book, it's the same kind of bad shit that isn't Voldemort that's always not Voldemort in the book. It's a defense against the dark arts teacher, which is the other person that does bad shit in the books.
And sometimes it is Voldemort just hanging out in their turban.
That's true. Sometimes it's both.
Petunia begins to kind of feel bad and scared for Harry when he mentions that Voldemort is back, because at one point Harry's like, Voldemort sent them, and Vernon's like, he's not here anymore. And then Harry says, he's back. And Petunia kind of is like, ah, that sucks. So we're learning more and more that Petunia is more familiar with the wizarding world, which makes me think she was like somewhat more involved than just, I found out my sister was a wizard and then I immediately disowned her. So there's something more there. Vernon tries to kick Harry out. He's like, I've had enough. You're getting out of here. And Harry can't leave because a million people told him to stay. A fifth owl then comes in and it's addressed to Petunia. And it's not just a letter. It's a growler, and when she opens it, it just says, remember my last, Petunia, and then disappears. And it's ominous and terrifying and probably from Dumbledore, but who knows?
I honestly don't remember. I really don't. So I'm like, remember my last.
And Harry tries to figure out what it is.
It's very similar to a note in Deathly Hallows, but I don't think they're related in any way.
Okay. The only thing I can think is that remember my last might be the last time he sent a howler to her, and it could have just berated her because maybe she did something that got Lily in trouble or got Lily exposed or whatever. But the only thing I'm confident guessing here is that it's from Dumbledore. I have no idea what the context is or anything like that. And that's the end of the chapter because they send Harry to bed and that's it. So chapter 3, the advance guard. So Harry writes a sassy letter to Sirius, Ron, and Hermione. All three of them, same letter. Basically, he's like, what the hell is going on? Tell me what's happening. I need to know. I'm Harry Potter. And he writes it, and while he's in the house, every time he passes a window, he gets mad because it reminds him of what happened. So he literally talks about like getting upset every time he sees a window. Just like, oh my God, Harry, get over
it. Which I mean is probably pretty often since like he's in one bedroom with a window. So it's pretty much constant.
Every time he opens his eyes, he's like, oh, son of a bitch.
I do love that when he sends the letters, he tells Hedwig, don't come back without a response and peck at them until they give you one.
Yes. Well, it's not only is it peck them until they give you one, but it's peck at them until what they've written is long enough. Like, if it's not long enough, you keep pecking them until they write
enough. Which I think is a really good service that, like, somehow Google can, like, algorithmically, like, solve in Gmail, where it's like, not only do I demand a response from you, but Google will, like, read this email and make sure that it is a good enough email. Like, that this responds to every point that I sent you, I want a good ass response, and I will accept nothing less.
Yeah, it's same thing with text messages. It's like, this is a text message you can't reply K to. Exactly. That is not acceptable. Yeah. Or not like thumbs up emoji. Like, we're going to need some words, potentially some commas and periods. We need some substance to this response.
She also describes Harry at this point as in one of his apathetic phases.
Okay.
Which I feel like one of his apathetic phases is like most of the time. I feel like most of the time,
him.
Harry is
yeah.
far too chill for the events going on around him until like shit really hits the fan. And then he's like,
yes.
Oh, I gotta wake up and start doing mm-hmm. something.
Yeah. There's so many examples of it, but even like the mermaid task from the last book, he just like keeps procrastinating. Like, I'll figure out the egg clue later. It's like, no, dude, you could die if you don't figure out what's going on. So he's very chill. Harry also like treats Hedwig poorly here, which makes me take the side of Hedwig. And I've been staunchly on not team Hedwig because I think she's just over the top sassy. But I start to feel bad even for her, because when she flies in finally after like getting food outside, like she's eating a frog, Harry's like, oh, about time. And then when he writes the letter, he's like, that'll do, go. Like, he's being super mean to Hedwig too. Harry's just being a piece of shit. He needs to take a chill pill and like count to 10. And realize everything's going to be okay. And just tough it up. Harry, after he sends off the letters, the only thing that can make him happy enough to go to bed, he's like, well, I'll have three lengthy letters to wake up to tomorrow. And then he goes to bed. He wakes up the next day and doesn't have any letters. And he's like, what the fuck? And decides that he's not going to leave his room for 4 days straight because he doesn't receive letters back.
I like the idea, based on like your interpretation of the scene. I've always wanted like the Harry Potter series to have a bit more like teen comedy movie feel to them. And I just imagine like Harry like sitting up, not getting the letters, saying what the fuck, just like you did. And then like, do-do-do-do, just starts playing. And it's just one of those songs that was like always in like those mid-2000s like teen comedies.
Yes.
And that's like the Harry Potter I really want made. Like when they remake it, I want it not mm-hmm. to be like a more serious, more dark Harry Potter. I want it to be like a way lighter teen comedy a la like Euro Trip American Pie.
Oh.
Give me that like seven movie series where it's just super hilarious.
Oh my goodness. There's so many turns that you can do Harry Potter. It would be great. So on the fourth day, Vernon announces to Harry that him, Petunia, and Dudley are going out. He's like, we're going to leave. Don't touch anything, etc. And Harry just keeps replying, fine, okay, yeah. Vernon's like, don't touch the TV, okay. Don't eat any food, okay. Don't leave your room, okay. Harry's just so fed up, doesn't want to deal with anything. Harry then hears a crack in the living room and some voices. And at first, Harry thinks, oh, burglars. Like, he didn't hear the same noise when it was apparating 2 chapters ago. But then he realizes, oh, wait, no, it's probably wizards because they're talking a bunch. Burglars would be quiet.
So he goes downstairs and there's a bunch of wizards and there's a bunch he doesn't recognize.
And the first one that's described, so you see Lupin is there.
The best.
You see that the real Moody is there, which is exciting. And then you get introduced to Tonks, which is everyone apparently's favorite character. Everyone's like, oh, you're going to.
Pretty great. She's pretty great.
I'm excited. Tonks seems fantastic. Everyone on Twitter, when I said I was reading book 5, everyone's like, oh my God, you're going to meet my favorite character. And it's yeah. Tonks. So Tonks is described as having violently purple hair, which is the second time in this book series that the color purple has been described as violent. And I love it. This is the second time the phrase violently purple has been up there. And I'm a fan. So there's a bunch of other wizards that they describe. And then later on, you'll learn their names. Lupin asks what Harry's Patronus is, because they have to make sure that it's Harry and not someone pretending to be Harry. So he describes that it's a stag, and then Lupin's like, good enough for me, which I feel like if someone was pretending to be Harry, they would know that, right? I feel like they picked a bad question.
Well, where has he used the stag? He's used it at the pond.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember where in book. Does he use it at all in book 4?
He uses it in the classroom, and then but only Lupin is there. And then, yeah, at the Quidditch match, it doesn't actually take the form when it was Crab Goyle right. and Malfoy. It wasn't actually a full stag. So I guess you're right. The only people who have seen it in full stag mode are the squad right. and Lupin. Yeah. So, okay. I guess it is a valid question to ask. So real Moody, you learn, is very paranoid. Harry puts his wand in his back pocket and Moody's like, don't do that. You can't put it there. A, it could go off in your pocket, or B, it could get stolen. And a couple of the other wizards respond, oh, you know, don't be so difficult, Moody. Don't be such a worrywart. It's like, yo, didn't you guys read book 4 when his wand got stolen out of his back pocket and then the whole book happened? I like, putting things in your back pocket is a terrible idea. Note to everyone, never put your wand in your back pocket. That's horrible. Never, ever, ever. So Moody telling him like, hey, put your wand in your front pocket or not back there. And everyone being like, oh, don't be such a buzzkill. It's like, dude, the whole fourth book was because Harry put his wand in his back pocket.
I do like that, like, the real Moody is just like, if you like swap like book 4's Moody, like imposter, like his like weird quirkiness, and just like switch that for like the same amount of just paranoia. And you essentially, because no other character traits really seem to change. Like, he's just as paranoid as the, like, fake Moody is, like, a quirky weirdo.
Yeah, but I do like real Moody better. As you learn more about Moody, he's way better. And I liked fake Moody in book 4. I'm quoted as saying in episodes of this podcast, like, oh, man, I really like Moody. It's a shame he's going to go away at the end of this episode, or at the end of this book. And then I learned later that he's Barty Crouch Jr. and not Ludo Bagman. I was so convinced.
I think at the time we're recording this, I think that's the last episode that has come out. And I was just like, not even close. Not even. And you were so sure of it.
At the time of recording this, the last episode to go out is the second with Rosiana, where I said, I don't know who it is, but it's either Bagman or Crouch, and it can't be anybody else.
Not a chance.
And then, like, the next episodes, I'm like, it's gotta be Bagman and no one else. And then finally the episodes of Sydney, I'm like, oh god, I've made a huge mistake. I love when I'm wrong at predicting shit. It's my favorite. It's so good.
And it's so easy because there's so much stuff to predict in these books.
Yeah, and I think I'm so smart where I'm like, oh, I'm totally going to get it because I was right for the first two books.
I haven't reread, like, book 1, so I don't know how obvious it is, Quirrell.
It's just a long episode of Scooby-Doo. It's got the classic, he's the first person you meet. He acts sketchy the whole time. Like, there's a red herring, which is Snape. It falls formulaically perfect. Tonks reveals that the lie that they used to get the Dursleys out of the house was invitation to quote, the All England Best Kept Lawn Competition. Which I love just the phrase of All England Best Kept Lawn, because I'm a huge basketball fan, and one of the highest honors is to be named on an All-NBA team. So either like first team All-NBA, first team All-Defense. So when it's like first team All-Best Lawn, I think it's just so good. So you learn that Tonks not only has dope-ass hair, but she can change it at any time she wants because she's a metamorph magus, and she can just change her appearance however she wants, willy-nilly. And then, after learning this, you meet some of the other crew. So there's Kingsley Shacklebolt, which is an amazing name.
One of my favorite names.
I think the best name. I can't think of a better one.
I think it is. Like, every time I say it, I go, that's a good one. That's a really good name.
Sirius Black is good. Remus Lupin is good because of what it means. Because Lupin is Latin for wolf, and Remus, I forget what Remus is for. Kingsley Shacklebolt just sounds dope. Like, that is a powerful name.
He's an
auror,
too, so he, like, is dope on top of it.
And then you later learn of that his job in the ministry is also hilarious. Yes. So, in addition, you've got Dolge, Diggle, Vance, Podmore, and Jones. I don't know if these people become important, but they were all volunteers to go save Harry. They are known as his guard. Then they decide that they're going to leave. Tonks uses a bunch of spells to like, clean the room that Harry had and pack up his stuff, all these other things. They're using a lot of spells that haven't been discussed. They're nothing profound, such as the packing spell or the clean room spell or anything like that. But it is kind of cool to see these very advanced wizards, because these are full, not only are they full adult wizards that should know every spell, but also there's a mix of aurors and high profile wizards. And it's kind of to the point where a lot of these things are just secondhand magic to them. And it was kind of cool to see, for me, a full wizard just kind of go to town, whereas Harry has to specifically like read books to know how to do hexes and other things such as that.
And then on the other hand, you have Arthur Weasley, who I took note to spend some time laughing at a potato peeler, which I think when I wrote down, I imagine like one that you just hold in one hand and hold the potato.
Yes.
But are there like potato peelers that you can like put like an apple peeler would like twist around the potato. Because that's
I've never seen that.
Because that would be a bit sillier. But if it's just a regular potato peeler, that's not a funny object.
No, it's just like a funny shaped knife with plastic covering.
You gotta get your shit together. Because it's not that funny.
His muggle thing is weird. He's a strange man. Before they leave, Moody, real Moody, uses a disillusionment charm on Harry to conceal him, which is basically kind of like an invisibility cloak, but instead of making him invisible, it just makes him a perfect chameleon. And basically the reason that they did this was because an invisibility cloak would fly off of him, because the way that they're getting to headquarters is by broom. So they see the signal given at the safe house, which is red sparks followed by green sparks. That's their cue to leave. So they go. And once Harry starts flying, all of his troubles go away. He feels great. He feels the rush of being with wizards and doing magic again. So we finally get a brief stint of Happy Harry. Now, to avoid Muggles seeing them, they have to fly way the fuck up into the sky. And because of that, they're flying through clouds. They're really high up. They're all freezing. Like, everyone is just freezing to death. Harry keeps mentioning that it's the worst thing he's flown in since that terrible rainy Quidditch match where the Dementors came. All kind of stuff like that.
I think they mention it very briefly in the book that if they go through the clouds, they get soaked.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, in the movie, when they go through the clouds, they actually wind up on the other side looking like they just jumped out of a pool.
Oh, nice.
I could be wrong about that, but it's a really nice detail if I'm remembering it correctly.
I hope so. That would be a great detail. So then the best thing happens is that when they finally get to the safe house, so that the Muggles don't see, the put-outer makes a comeback. They use the put-outer and they take away all the lights from the street lamp. And I'm so excited because in episode one of this podcast, I make fun of the put-outer for being the dumbest name of anything ever. And there's a bunch of people on Twitter that tell me, oh, it's not called the put-outer. It's the deluminator or whatever. Yo, this is the second time it's been called the put-outer. I don't know if book seven... J.K. Rowling's like, oh, right, that is a stupid name. Let me fix this. And then Roy's like, oh, by the way, Dumbledore forgot to tell everyone that it's actually called the Deluminator. No, this shit's called the Put-Outer, guys. Two different books. Where is the Put-Outer?
Years apart. Like a decade apart.
4 books later, it's still the Put-Outer.
Also, I love that this is like apparently a very magical object because like they got loaned to them by Dumbledore.
Yes.
Whereas like I imagine like this being something you could just buy.
No, it's very special.
But apparently it's so rare that only like it seems like something if all of the members of the Order of the Phoenix should have some put outers.
Yeah.
But apparently not. Apparently Dumbledore's got like the one and you got to borrow from him if you need it.
And why is there no spell for this? They can do so many things, but they can't take away lights from a street lamp. You need this special device that only Dumbledore owns.
You gotta store the light somewhere. That's what the put-outer is good for. It stores the light.
It's so dumb, but I'm so glad it's back.
Even, I mean, I think there's a lot of crazy magical rules in Harry Potter, but none more so, really, than than the put-outer, because that just, like I'm fine with magic bending the rules of physics.
Sure.
But there's a point where it's like, you can bend it a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't just, like, move light around nilly-willy. Like, that's just so that's crazy.
If you guys like the put-outer, my Instagram page is literally just based off making fun of the put-outer. It's pictures of daily household objects and then lame names. So, like, I have a picture of a pen and I'm like, oh, look at this word writer, or, like, a calculator. I'm like, look at these, like, things adder. It's great. Instagram.com/potterlesspodcast. So then Moody hands Harry a note with the address of the headquarters, and it says that it's the Order of the Phoenix, which I'm flipping out because we've learned the title of the book in chapter 3, which never happens. It's always like chapter 17 when you learn what the title of the book means. So I'm freaking out at this point when I read this. And that is the end of chapter 3, and it is also the end of this episode. But fear not, because Eric and I will be back very soon in real time, but 2 weeks in podcast world time to discuss chapters 4 through 8 of Harry Potter. But Eric, thank you so much for joining along for this episode of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. How do you feel?
I feel great. I really enjoyed it. I was glad that like this was the opening to a book that didn't actually just like drag on forever. Like it drags 10 minutes, but then like it really gets into some stuff.
Yeah, it does. It's good. Things are happening right away. So I guess, is there anything you want to plug besides Spirits Podcast, which you are the editor for?
Spirits Podcast. You can go to, you can just search Spirits on your podcasting app or spiritspodcast.com. And our hosts, Julie and Amanda, they drink spirits and they talk about myths like spirits.
Oh, such a, it's a good pun.
And
it's
yeah,
a very
you can
good pun.
Follow me on pretty much anywhere at I'm Eric Schneider.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining. And until thank next you. Time, as they say in Hogwarts, wizard on!
Potterless was created by Mike Schubert. It is hosted by Mike Schubert. It is edited by Mike Schubert. It is produced by Mike Schubert, as well as Andreas Ozelby, Griffin Mecklenburg, Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Erica and Calvin Bauer, Michael Vanderslice, Sadie Bear, Emily Whiffen, Chandra Cruz, Jesse Horgan, and Maggie Zobizek. Web design by Kelly Beckman, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can find us on any of your preferred podcasting apps, as well as facebook.com/potterless, Twitter at potterlesspod, Instagram is Potterless Podcast, and of course, everything is on our website, potterlesspodcast.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. And until next time, Wizard on!